Hello everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of the Read Right to Left podcast. I, as always, am G, joined by my always wonderful co-host, Ray, from Whimsical Pictures.
Hi everybody.
And this month we're doing something a little bit different. We had to push it back a little bit compared to when we originally scheduled it, but this is sort of the launch, not quite launch, of G's light novel corner,
we are not going to be talking about a light novel today.
Exactly. That's why I'm saying it's sort of the soft launch. Not really. We're not talking about a light novel, so the name doesn't work. But this is I think we've decided it's going to be an annual thing, not necessarily the same month, but once a year we are going to be talking about a prose book versus comics, which obviously for long-time listeners, you know that's all we ever talk about, mm-hmm. is comics. So we decided to shake it up a little bit, namely because there's a lot of crossover between these sorts of fans of this media, whether that is Japanese light novels, whether in this case today, danmei, which is Chinese MLM novels, gay novels. So we'll be talking about some over the coming, who knows how long this will last, but over the foreseeable future, we do have some time planned out to talk about a novel every year. Mm-hmm. And as Ray alluded to, today we are talking about the super popular, fan favorite, Heaven Official's Blessing by Mo Xiang Tong Zhu. Also, before we get into it, pronunciation, I'm so bad. I'm bad enough with Japanese pronunciation. I got no hope with Chinese. I'm sorry.
I have no idea what I'm saying at all.
So, preemptively, I apologize to everyone who knows, like, the correct pronunciation. I'm trying my hardest, but yeah. I don't expect great things.
I looked up how to pronounce, like, you know, a lot of the names and stuff on YouTube before this, but, like, obviously I don't know how to make any of those tones and stuff. I would need extensive practice in order to learn those tones, so we're just not really going to be trying, to be honest.
So, again, this preemptive apology, please be gracious and forgiving. But we are talking about MXTX, the author, her third and technically most recent novel. She's written two other danmei previously, that being Scum Villain, Self-Saving System, which was her debut work, and the almost more popular of her titles, which is Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation in English, aka Modao Zushi. But today we're talking about her third novel, Tianguan Sifu, aka Heaven Official's Blessing, which, interestingly enough, Ray, you may not be aware of this, but it's been quite a big news in danmei fandom space over the last week, because the author just released a revised edition of this novel, which has like 10,000 words more extra content. So that was something she was working on for kind of, people knew that she was working on that, but it finally was released. People have been doing comparisons and, you know, all sorts of things in this last week. And also, apparently, currently, again, I'm not across all of the news on this. There are certainly fans who are much more well-informed, but she is currently working on her fourth novel. Don't know the name, don't know the characters' names. I just know that she is currently working on this. Mm-hmm. So, before we get into this particular book, this is a Seven Seas release. But notably, Danmei is a kind of as a genre, I liken it to, I mean, it's a web novel. They are published online for free, typically, or on certain publishing platforms, self-published works in the style of like a lot of light novels in Japan currently. I want to make note that, as said, this is Chinese media, and unlike some of the web novels that we see from Japan and Korea as well, there's something very interesting in that Danmei is hugely popular, both within Chinese-speaking communities, countries, and but also, you know, internationally. It's because of mainland China's view on LGBT people. There's always been a very fine line as to creator. There's hugely popular creators. We know nothing about them, which is kind of for their own safety. But at the same time, China's in this interesting space where this is one of their most popular exports. They don't want to proactively be stopping it. So there's a lot of very difficult and complex conversations about, obviously, like, the acceptability of queer media in China, what gets exported and what doesn't, namely for Seven Seas' release of all of their Danmei, not just Heaven Official's Blessing. And this is, all of them use, from my understanding, and most Danmei translated into English use the Taiwanese editions to translate, because they are not, they're more explicit, basically. They're not going to get in trouble for having characters kiss, have sex, etc. So that's not really an issue with Heaven Official's Blessing, because it is not very explicit, just overall chaste. Anyway. It's quite chaste throughout the whole sweet series. Romantic boys. Comparatively, even comparatively to MXTX's other works, wherein her characters in those have some pretty freaky sex. This one is a lot less kinky overall. So it might not have been an issue, right? But again, there's probably also, I cannot speak to it. Again, I have no chance with the language, the original language here. So I am not in a position to read the original works, the original language of these works. I am reliant completely on the English translations, as I'm sure is Ray as well. We've made that very clear. So when speaking about this book and this topic in general, we're coming at it from the English perspective, which is just, I mean, that's just the reality of it. So apologies again if we don't have every awareness of everything going on. But with all of that out of the way, would you like me to somewhat explain what Heaven Official's Blessing is, or would you like to talk about the plot, Ray?
The plot that I know from the first novel?
Yes.
That's the first thing that I should say, is that, have you read the whole thing, or just what's out in English officially, or?
So, I, like in most things that I partake in, I stick to the legal releases. That's also something we should mention. There's a huge fan community for Danmei, so there's a lot of fan translations, a lot of machine translations for ongoing works, and a lot of these very popular works. So a lot of people in the fandom, a lot of fans, have read this in its entirety. I have not. I have read the four English novels that have been released by Seven Seas. I also know some spoilers because it's impossible to exist in any fandom without coming across spoilers. But I do not know the full story. I do know important things though, so that's maybe helpful. And with the Seven Seas releases, each book contains part of the Chinese versions of the web novel. So the first Seven Seas book contains about 2/3 of the first book that would have been published online. I think there's 5 books in For Heaven Official's Blessing that was published online, which will be roughly about 8 English novels. So we are about halfway through the story currently, if you are following the English releases like myself.
Yep. And then meanwhile, for this G's Light Novel Corner, I do not read very much, like, in terms of light novels or web novels or any of this kind of thing. So for me, this was my chance to jump into Danmei for the very first time. I don't have the most time to be reading 500-page novels all the time. So I read the first one for this month's podcast, so I have read exactly 1 Danmei novel ever. And it's the first one for this series. So we are talking about maybe in the future, once I have, because I will be continuing with this series. I did enjoy the first one. Spoilers, I guess. So once, like, maybe all 8 of them is out in English, we may revisit this topic to see how my opinion and G's opinion have, like, shifted throughout the run of the series. But for today, it's just baby's first steps into this genre for me.
Yes, yeah. So, plot-wise, it's been a little while since I've read this first novel. In saying that, I do... If you would like me to explain, I'm happy to explain. But what was... How did you feel coming into this plot, Ray? Or what is the plot? What did you think this plot is from book one?
From book one. From only book one. Well, the plot of this was... First, we got this, like, expansive epic prologue where I only understood about 30% of what was going on. And then later I watched, like, the first couple episodes of the Donghua, which is the cartoon series adaptation.
Edition.
Yep. And that cleared some things up for me. We will get into why some of this was perhaps more esoteric and confusing than it may have been to Chinese, like, if I read Chinese rather than this translation, but that'll come with some of our questions later, I think. But basically it goes through, like, the whole rise and fall and the 3 ascensions into the heavenly realm of a figure called the Prince of Shanla, I think it is. And basically, it goes through the first one in pretty great detail. He was this, like, beloved prince, beloved by the heavenly emperor. He's called, like, the prince who pleased God or something. And he ascended into the heavenly realm at 17, which is, like, really, really young. But he came down into the mortal realm to save his kingdom of Shanla from, like, peril. And he ended up getting banished from the heavenly realm. And then there's a span of time in which we don't really learn in this first novel what all happened. and he ascends again into the heavenly realm, but this time he's only there for 30 minutes before he gets kicked back down to Earth. At this point, his reputation is terrible. He has, like, no spiritual power, and he has to wander the Earth, finding and selling scraps and busking for, you know, to eke out a meager survival. And 800 years after that first ascension, we come to our character now. His name is Xie Lian, and he has just ascended to the heavens for the third time, and with a resounding crash, he's thunder, you know, lightning, light flashing. He knocked a giant bell into a martial god. He ruined some people's some heavenly officials' beautiful golden palaces. So basically, no one's happy to see him here. He's well aware of that. He's like, well, this is awkward. And in order to pay back all of the people whose palaces he accidentally destroyed, he has to gain, what is it, like 8.88 million merits.
Yeah, a lot of money. A lot of money!
And so, he swiftly gets, sort of, the god of scholars, I guess, Ling Wen, is like, hey, I found a job for you, you have to deal with this ghost guy, down in the mortal realm, and so he goes down into the mortal realm, and, deals with the ghost guy, and from there on, for the rest of the novel, it's like, episodic ghost hunting adventures. basically. And, you know, he meets, the love of his life, also, so...
You put that very, very casually. Oh, just also, by the way, he just meets.
Well, it's okay. So, it is an important aspect of the first novel, but it's really just like he only figures out who this guy even is, like right at the end of the first book. And it's all like, it's all very like fateful encounters, and it's very romantic. And they have like the most memorable scenes in the book together, but there is so much plot that just has to be built up behind it. So it's kind of like, oh, and also there's like some BL stuff going on.
Right. I'm gonna impart some wisdom on you. And that is every Danmei is just 90% plot. Or, like, 85% plot, and then 15% gay shit. The gayest shit you've ever seen. So, I think preemptively, that's a really good jumping off point. The difference between, or at least from the Danmei that I've read and experienced, it is a much more plot-focused genre, maybe? Comparatively to what you might be more used to with BL manga, BL novels. There is certainly relationship stuff, and the relationship between the characters is always very important. But depending on the genre of the Danmei, because there's also like a variety, there's horror stuff, there's sci-fi, there is Zanjia, which is this genre, which is about like gods. And cultivation.
Yeah.
There's always like grand plots. And then boys kissing amidst all of that grand
amidst plot. All the plot.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm gonna say again, as someone who's read a little bit more than you, or some more than you, there is substantially more plot to come. This is all of these novels that I've read. Another really good example is MXTX's other very, very popular series, which is Modao Zushi, Grandmaster's Demonic Cultivation, or The Grandmaster Demonic Cultivation. That is like so much. Again, that also has a little bit of, I don't want to say it's not ghost solving, it's more like murder mystery. There's a murder mystery plot, there's also a very grand plot about war and various clans and politics, which is all very interesting, but then also the characters are all very interesting, so it's definitely worth it. Anyway,
yeah, I mean, I don't say this to say that it's, like, bad. Like, it was, I guess, different from what I expected. Because I'm not someone who has, like, a super, like, I know what wuxia is. And, which this xiangxia is, like, almost like a subcategory of wuxia from what I understand. So it's like I was vaguely aware of that stuff, but it's not like I've read a lot of stories within that genre or those genres. So for me it was like essentially discovering an entirely new genre that like just wasn't something I'd read before. So like, you know, even if I sound like bewildered, that's just because it's new to me. It's not like, I thought it was bad. It just took some getting used to, I guess. Especially as someone who like, when I read prose, it's like literary fiction. Like, I am the most boring and pretentious of, book readers. All of my genre fiction needs are fulfilled by manga and Takarazuka, and if it's books, it's like, you know, the less plot, the happier I am.
So. Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head regarding, especially as a English-speaking fan, and I would argue that a lot of the current fandom is not one, are not people that can read Chinese, at least in the English speaking space. They are reading various translations, whether legal or otherwise. And thus, there's not, up until this point, over the last couple of years, there's certainly been Chinese media that has found an audience, but it has not nearly exploded in the same way that it has currently. So for a lot of people getting into this, into Danmei, they are coming from a background of like Korean webcomics or drama or Japanese, obviously manga, light novels, BL, that there is a little bit of a culture, not shock, but adjustment, because you just have no context that you would in the same way with other Asian media that you've probably consumed in the past. One of the really good examples or kind of parallels I like to make with this is that I don't know about you, Ray, but I have read the Holic light novel, which was put out by Viz 20 years ago now, and the amount of footnotes for cultural stuff that is in that book, which is maybe not that surprising because it's also a novel written by Nisio Eason.
Enough said, really.
Yes, but also when I read it, which was maybe a year or so ago, maybe a little bit longer ago now, as someone who knows Japanese culture, or like a lot of Japanese culture, stories, folklore, everything, it was all of those footnotes were completely unnecessary. Like, I knew everything. I didn't need it explained to me. So with Seven Seas, for those who are reading their releases, there is a very big glossary at the back of these books, and that is crucial. I feel like that is that, rather than riddling these novels with a million footnotes, they've just chucked a glossary at the end of every single book, because they know that we know shit all about this genre, about Chinese culture.
I was so grateful, because I'm, like, in the prologue, like, what the fuck is a cultivator? I thought that was a tractor. Just turn to the glossary, now I know what it is. I don't know, I feel like we'll get into the translation controversies later, but regarding the glossary, I do feel like, for something, a lot of these terms that, like, are central to not just this particular series, but, like, the genre, but also just, like, to this particular series, like, say, like, the term cultivator, you know?
Yeah.
Just, I don't know, like, what kind of, you know, regulations were imposed on the translators in this case. But in general, like, for terms like that, like lore terms or cultural terms, even though it's obviously not going to be in the original Chinese text to explain what that is, because readers will know, like, as a translator, you can just include a sentence or two of expositionary dialogue, or not dialogue, but, like, text. Yeah. Like, that's part of localizing.
Right. Yeah, we'll get into it, because there's a lot of varying opinions on this, and we'll get into it when that question comes up, because I agree with you, but I also don't think that existing fans would agree with you. It's a very prickly situation. You're about to start wars.
Okay, so I obviously have very strong opinions about translation. I'm not a professional translator, but G knows well that as a hobby, I translate and subtitle Takarazuka musicals, which are otherwise just, there's no way to access English translations of them. So I just subtitle them and I show them in private streams to people. So through that process, I've developed a lot of strong opinions about translation. So yeah, but we'll get into it.
So, circling back to, like, the actual topic of this discussion, or at least the plot, the characters, Ray mentioned that at the quite early on in this piece, our main character, Shailian, meets the love of his life. She didn't actually say his name. His name is Hua Cheng. Who is notably, whilst Shailian is a god, he lives within the heavenly realms and has ascended three times. Hua Cheng is not, he is a ghost king. So he is, it's very much, I don't want to say
they're
Romeo and Juliet story.
Star-crossed lovers.
They are star-crossed lovers. He is one of the most notorious ghostly beings within the immortal world, and so everyone is, all the other heavenly officials are extremely afraid of him, notably because one time he went up to the heavens and just absolutely destroyed like 33 gods.
God.
Which is a very prominent number across MXTX's works, 33. Just casually.
Yeah, she uses a lot of number symbology, which is also helpfully explained to some extent in the glossary, so...
Yes, yeah. But after... So, Xielian gets told to go help or sort out various issues in the human... Like, in, yeah, the human realm with various ghosts and ghoulies. And... So, initially, he is asking for help. Nobody likes him. He's not a very popular guy. But two guys do join him as basically support. Because, again, he doesn't have any spiritual power that he has access to.
Yeah.
And so, these two are actually, funnily enough, from the, I guess... Entourage might be the wrong word, but they work under the two martial gods that the one who had the bell fall on him, and then the other one whose palace was destroyed when that other martial god cut the bell in half. He accidentally like cut this other guy's
was it an accident though?
No, because those two as well,
they
those
hate
gods
each other.
Have been, they hate each other. They've hated each other for 800 years because, funnily enough, and I don't know if it's fully explained in this first novel, but both of those martial gods were very close to...
They used to work for him, right?
Yes, yeah. One of them was his bodyguard. One of them was, like, his personal assistant. And so they were very close, but... Those two have never got on. They like each other, but they would rather die than admit that.
Oh, so they're in love.
Yes, exactly, Ray. Exactly. I'm glad you understood. As you alluded to, Ray, and I know you probably don't care too much about spoilers, and it's not really a spoiler. It's pretty fucking obvious.
Yeah.
It took forever for Xielian to recognize Hua Cheng. I don't want to say it takes longer for him to realize that these two guys who just join him on all of his adventures...
These weird guys who, like, you know, they haven't told their bosses that they're working with him, and, like, no one seems to know that they're, like, with him. Like, he brings them up in the heavenly court and they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? I don't know who those people are. Obviously it's the two guys, right? That's not revealed in the first novel, but
it's not revealed. It still hasn't been revealed in what is available in English. They're not hiding it well. They change hairstyle. They switch hairstyles and they're like, that's fine. That'll do it. That'll trick them. You'll have no idea. They are not the most brilliant of individuals, but that's fine because they're martial gods. They just got to be good at fighting.
Yeah, and they are. You know what?
Them to have brain powers.
They are good at fighting. I really like the one. I get the two of them mixed up. I think it's Fu Yao who is just constantly rolling his eyes.
Yeah,
it's like your face is gonna get stuck that way.
And there's a long complicated history between those three characters, and specifically kind of what happened for them to go on their separate ways, especially after Xielian's various ascensions and being kicked out of the heavens again and again. But that doesn't happen yet in this novel, so you don't have to worry about it.
Look, I'm already overwhelmed with what I got. It's just so funny that every time we every time we go to explain, like, a simple character beat, we also have to be like, oh, and also it's connected to all of this plot.
Yeah, yeah, well, again, that's all, every Danmei that I have come across is just plot. Every, you cannot mention a character without, like, 300 caveats of different things and how they're wrapped up in all sorts of different story beats, and there's grand past histories, and oh my god, there's so much is going on.
But you know what? Also, there's one thing, yeah, there's one thing that is beautifully simple in this novel. And it is just the absolutely adorable banter between Xie Lian and Hua Cheng throughout the whole book.
Yes, yeah. And Hua Cheng is a whole different kettle of fish, because there is a lot going on there too.
They're in love, G. It's beautiful.
No, yes, Ray. That I never put that into question. But he is, although not exactly as it who he seems to be. There's like, why is he just so immediately in love with our main character?
Well, they make that very obvious, yeah, like, in the
it's not a surprise, and it should, none of these twists should be surprises, because it's fucking blatantly obvious, but the more you go into it, or the longer you read, the more you recognize, oh my god, this man has been simping for 800 years at every opportunity.
It's so Takarazuka, I love it. I picked this series out of the three STX offerings because it sounded very Takarazuka, and yeah, the romance parts of it are, yes, star-crossed lovers through generations of time. Heaven and hell, it's very, we love to see it.
Someday, Ray, I'll get you to read or watch, maybe, Modal Zushi, because I think the romance will be right up your alley on that one as well. Less, not as long simping, but just as powerful simping, I feel. that one is also very kinky.
Hey, we love that too.
So, anyway, we're not talking about Modal Zushi. We're talking about Tianguan Sufu again. So that is basically the general plot of this first novel, which, as mentioned, is about 2/3 of the first original web-published novel. Book 2 of the English obviously wraps up that first novel. We have Xie Lian visiting the ghost city that Hua Cheng kind of rules over. And, oh my gosh, there's some stuff happening there. But mainly a lot of this book is, as Ray said, kind of not monster of the week, but, you know, there's a ghost issue, go sort it out. Okay, sorted it out. There's some little bits and pieces of context and backstory. Xie Lian, as a person, again, been wandering the human realm for close to 800 years. He's had his fingers in a lot of pies. He certainly got around.
Everyone else is just like, bitch, you live like this? And he's like,
yeah. Well, the other, I think, notable thing we need to mention is that since ascending again and now doing these kind of odd, ghostly odd jobs to earn money and to improve his reputation amongst the heavens and also the common people, he has established a very small rundown shrine outside of a very small rundown town.
It's named after your dog, G.
Yeah. Poochie. Poochie Shrine. And when on his way to this this very small village, he is sitting in the back of a hay cart, and he meets a very attractive, interesting, fascinating young man called San Lang, who just kind of decides to join him and then starts living with him for a little while and is just like, hey, I got nowhere to be, nothing to do. Do you mind if I hang out? And he's like, sure, kind stranger, who is very handsome. Again, not a surprise, this is Hua Cheng. Like, this is just...
What?
What? Who could have
thought? I kind of like how, like, there's not, like, this big reveal either. It's just really, like, gradually... Like, Xie Lian knows that there's something up with this guy from the start. He just hasn't quite confirmed his suspicions yet. And he also doesn't know very much about Hua Cheng because he, like... He's kind of been living under a rock for hundreds of years because of his various ascensions and demotions, living among the mortal realms for so long. But, like, at the end of the book, he's just like, so what's good, Hua Cheng? Hua Cheng's like, haha, you knew. So, it's cute.
So, and that's basically the plot of the first book, is various problem-solving Scooby-Doo Mystery of the Week type of stories, and then the establishment of the shrine, and very importantly, the bequeathment of a ring from San Lang, Hua Cheng, to Xie Lian, which is very notable, and probably one of the more iconic moments of this first part of the story. And with that, we should probably answer some questions.
Yeah, we got a lot. From at 365 days of 801, I'd like to hear a bit about your history with the genre, how long you have liked it, what led you to read this title? We'll start there. So we've kind of already answered this one. So I chose this one because we wanted to go with one from MXDX because... she is definitely the most, like, well-known, famous, popular Danmei author here in, you know, English-speaking fandom, and the first author that we've seen get official English releases of her books. And I chose this one in particular because I like stories about star-crossed lovers and reincarnation and stuff like that, so... and my history with the genre, I have none. Gee, your turn.
She is freshly minted. So I first discovered or got into Danmei when I watched the Donghua, the animated adaptation of Modazushi, Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation. At the time, there was only two seasons out. Since then, the third and final season has been released. So I experienced adaptation first, which is kind of just the generally how things happen for me. Again, I started as an anime fan, then went to manga. This was over... I was aware of it, namely because I'd seen, you know, gift sets and art, fan art and stuff around, floating about online, but over the COVID shutdown period, a lot of people were introduced particularly to that series. Not just the animated adaptation, but the live action adaptation called The Untamed, which is on Netflix. So a lot of people were introduced to Danmei through those adaptations. For anyone interested, you can The Untamed is still on Netflix. You can watch it if you so wish. The animated version, the Donghua, is available in its entirety from the Chinese publisher with English subtitles on a bunch of various streaming platforms, but most notably YouTube, which is where I watched it. I really enjoyed those first two seasons. I, in the interim to the third season, then watched the Donghua of Scum Villain Self-Saving System, which, as mentioned, is MXTX's other work. Definitely the black sheep of her titles. Loved that. That was a good time. And just kind of jumped around with various adaptations, because at this point there had not been any of the novels licensed. I just didn't have access to them. And although I don't inherently have an issue with fan translations for stuff, I also don't, like Ray, don't have a huge amount of time to be dedicating to, like, hundreds of thousands of chapters of a web novel, fan translated or not. And that's if you're lucky. A lot of them are stuck with machine translations. So it was just like, well, you know, I enjoy these characters. I will continue to enjoy them in the version that I have experienced. And luckily enough, Seven Seas saw the money in the water and really kickstarted the English market by licensing the three MXTX novels. That's not to say that they're the only publisher. We do have two other boutique publishers for Danmei, one being Peach Flower House, the other being Via Lacte. I own, I think, every single novel that they put out in print. Every single Danmei that's been put out in print, I have purchased. I haven't read all of them, at all. I've read all of Scum Villain. That's a shorter book. Shorter series, I should say. There's four volumes in English. I have the entirety of Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation. The fifth and final novel just came out this month. I've got the four volumes of Heaven Official's Blessing, and I've read all of those. I am about halfway through with Modal Zushi. But I've also read, specifically from Peach Flower House, the first half of In the Dark, which is, if we're going to talk about translation, there's a reason they are reissuing that series. I've read the first half of Little Mushroom, which is a sci-fi series, notably better done than In the Dark. And actually, I am almost all of the way through their most recent and one of their most prominent licenses, which is Golden Terrace, aka Golden Stage. That's been a good time. As I said, I do actually own Violacte's print releases, Silent Hearts and The Missing Piece, I think are the only two out so far. Salad Days is shipping out soon. But I haven't had the opportunity to actually read them. Again, the prose just takes longer to read, and I'm a working adult. I don't necessarily have that much time. So I cannot speak to the translation quality to those. But just full stop, as being a Danmei fan, it's probably been about two and a half years. I fell into MXTX's works, that because they were the ones with the most accessible adaptations, especially for those not wanting to try and find, you know, torrents and, you know, various fan subs and things. Since I have also picked up the rest or the continuous stream of Seven Seas' Danmai as well, no, of course, Meat Bun stuff. So Urha, or the husky and his white cat, she's in, I don't know, I can't remember the full English title for that one, which is a very, very popular series. Thousand Autumns, which is another, that's not by Meat Bun, that's by someone else, I think. And then there's Priest, who is also a very notable Danmai author. Her novels have also been licensed. I don't think any of them are out yet. So I own lots. I haven't read all of them. but I would say that now, again, over this course of the last couple years, through exposure and through enjoying all of the series or majority of the series that I've read and watched, that I would say that, like with anything, like Danmai, there's good and bad. I can't speak to everything that's, you know, currently still publishing and, you know, it doesn't have any licenses. But for what is available in English, we have some very, very popular and notable creators available and publishers, both Seven Seas and the boutique publishers, have made very calculated decisions as to what they've licensed and released. So, yeah. That's as to what led me to read this title in particular. This is another... I mean, I enjoyed MXTX's other series. After watching Scum Villain, I watched the Heaven Official's Blessing Donghua, which also has a season out. And enjoyed that, and so again, it was a no-brainer. I was like, oh sure, absolutely, read this. I love these characters, I want to see what happens, give me more. So that's it.
Okay. Next question, also from at 365 days of 801. Your opinion on the adaptation. I'm assuming that means the Donghua.
Yeah.
I've only watched a couple episodes of it, so I don't know. It's the book so far. It's the pacing's a little weird, but maybe I just need to get used to it, so yeah, that's my opinion.
I enjoy the adaptation of I do enjoy Heaven Official's Blessing adaptation very well. As Ray said, pacing's a little bit, doesn't rise and fall in the same way that you would expect from a shorter form series. It's only 11 episodes. But again, that's just due to the structure of the novel. I do think that if you are new to Danmai, you know shit all about anything. You don't know anything about Chinese culture. You don't know anything about Xianjia, like the genre. I do think that the adaptations are probably an easier start.
Yeah.
And I say this as someone who, again, watched two seasons of Murao Zushi, Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation. And honestly, for like that first season, I had no clue what was going on. I was like, what is this? But I loved it. And then I rewatched it a little while afterwards. I was like, okay, this makes so much more sense. I don't know why I was confused, but it's hard to follow when there's a lot of stuff you just can't know. You just no way to know until you immerse yourself into it.
With Heaven Official's Blessing in particular, just in terms of like storytelling styles that I'm more used to, the Donghua definitely starts in a way that is going to be familiar to anime fans, in that it starts in media res, it introduces the first like ghost story pretty quickly. and it starts with like some action going on, and then it goes back, it introduces your main character, and then goes back and tells you all the prologue stuff in like a flashback, which is going to be a lot friendlier, I think, to people who are coming at this more from like Japanese or Korean media in particular, especially if you're like an anime watcher. Whereas, like I said, the first novel, like literally the first thing you are presented with is like this, it's like the genealogy chapters in the Bible. It's like just like this very detached, like from afar, prologue detailing like the heavenly exploits of this guy that you do not know yet. So which, you know, is just new, right? It's not something I'm used to. So.
Yeah. I think all of MXTX's novels, I mean, every Danmei, especially within this genre, has that prologue of like, oh, this is all the set dressing for all of this stuff. And then you're like, okay, this is kind of the general world that our characters live in. Jump cut to our characters, right?
So, and I'm reading it like, okay, I don't know anybody in this world though, so why do I care?
Well, it's not real, like, I see it as, you're not really supposed to care, it's just to context, like, okay, there's been a big war, there's three clans fighting, or, you know, there's this that's happened, we will find out all of this stuff later on. Golden State, this is not just a MXTX intrinsic or like a quirk. Golden Stage has the same thing where you are like, oh yes, there's a war, and this is there was this great general, young general, and there was an assassination attempt and he got injured and now he's come back to the thing, and you're like, okay, that's all right, cool. And then you're like actually spending some time with that character. So it's a little, again, it's a little bit of set dressing, especially because Wuxia and Zhangjia are fantasy, you know, they're a fantasy genre, but, and there's a lot of kind of staples, but every single interpretation can be different. So I think for the reason you have those prologues is to be like, okay, yes, here's the political situation, here's the type of cultivation that these people are doing, this is like sort of how the world works, so you're not as a reader just thrust into a world and then expected to know or to not know what tropes are being used. Again, that's not inherently reader-friendly for those who aren't intimately familiar with them, but for this type of self-published work, I think it's just an easy shorthand for the author to say, this is the world that I've created, these are kind of a very quick intro to at least our main character, if not both of the male leads. You don't have to necessarily worry about it yet, but just be aware that this has happened in the past. You know, footnote that in your brain. I feel like every adaptation of every Danmei that I've read or watched, because there's also comic versions of these, including Heaven Official's Blessing, which you can read. I think it's on one of the web readers. That adjusts the timeline or like when certain elements are introduced more than others, just for ease of reading and more, just better flow of story. So I do, as I said, I do enjoy the Donghua adaptation of this series. I think, honestly, there's a lot of very good scenes in the Donghua. I find that Hua Sheng's introduction with with our main character, Shailene, in The Wedding Reds is a very strong character introduction, and it's done very well. But the moment on the cart when our characters meet each other as, like, quote-unquote regular people is also done really well, too. And there's just a lot of fun that's put together at the shrine. A lot of those more, less high-stakes scenes, I should say.
So that was the next question, was favorite scene. So I only watched a couple episodes of the Donghua, but I agree with the scenes that you mentioned being particularly standout. And then last question from at 365 Days of 801 is, also, do you follow fan art, memes, AU fiction, etc.? If so, do you have a favorite creator? I have loved finding memes and short form videos of TGCF content and laughing my ass off. I love when the algorithm works for you. I have found so many talented fans. I mean, I just finished this one book, so. maybe we'll work on that in the future.
I do follow a lot of fan artists, just generally for MX, well, Danmei, but MXTX works. I can't think of anyone particular to Tianguan Sifu, just because a lot of the fan creators that I'm following right now typically have a focus on Modao Zushi. I think, again, that's just me because that has more people who've watched or read it. It also has more characters to play around with. so that might be why. I actually, funnily enough, early, I don't even know if I started any Danmei consumption or enjoyment. I was aware of Danmei before I really got into it, but one of the first things that I saw that could be really regarded as Heaven Official's Blessing fan content was a animatic, kind of like a short animatic on YouTube, maybe, where somebody had, you know, done a little animated thing to a very heartfelt song, blah blah blah, and it was really really good. I think I followed that artist for a fandom from 200 years ago, but I really enjoyed it. It was something that I was like, oh, okay, and then I had no idea who the characters were, but it was interesting. It engaged me, and I was like, oh man, I'd love to know more about this. And it wasn't until, obviously, a little much later that I was watching Heaven Official's Blessing that I was like, oh, these are those characters. Made a lot more sense. I mainly see Modao Zushi on my Twitter feed. And then the other, like, prominent artist who I support on Patreon, who does MXTX artwork. Her favorite series is Scum Villain. So much so that she did the bonus posters for the final special edition version of that novel. So a lot of her, like, art and fun little comics and stuff are focused on those characters, versus, you know, Hua Cheng and Xielian, or Wei Ying and Lan Zhan from Modao Zushi. So I enjoy fan works, but I'm not proactively looking for them, and I don't think I will be until I have run out of other official content to stuff into my brain.
Yeah, and then for my part, I just don't, like, I'd probably end up finding fan artists just on Twitter or whatever, but usually it's pretty passively that I discover that kind of thing. But just in terms of, like, some of the pacing stuff we were talking about earlier, I wonder if, like, going into Danmei, similar to, like, going into Japanese web novels, which is also something that has always been rather difficult to access for me personally. I wonder if I had more, like, background reading, like, fan works and other types of media that are self-published on the internet in a chapter-by-chapter format, if that stuff would be feel more accessible to me as a reader. At Rin Reads Manga says, who's your favorite character? From volume one. I can't say anything but the two main characters, so it's like, I'm not even gonna try. I like the guy who rolls his eyes a lot. He's fun. What about you, G?
Yeah, for myself, I would say that probably if out of the two main characters, it would probably be our main character, Xielian.
Yeah.
More so than Huacheng. Not because Huacheng isn't interesting, but he's a simple man. He has simple motivations, and that is to give his god everything that he could ever want. Support him in anything that he does. The really wonderful thing, in my opinion, about Danmei is that all characters, especially main characters, are very complicated people. There's very rarely you come across, like, a pure character who's just, like, sweet and innocent and knows nothing of the world. A lot of characters in Danmei have commit some sort of genocide. But you like them despite that, because there's always reasons. And they might not be good reasons, but they might have been the reasons that made the most sense in the moment. They feel very human.
There's very, like, sweeping epics about these characters who have lived for hundreds of years, or are these, like, crazy, like, heavenly or ghostly beings. Like, they're very legendary figures, so the atrocities they commit are also legendary. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, but I'm not even just talking about, like, godly characters or ghostly characters. MXTX's characters in particular, a lot of them have done really terrible things. And sometimes those things are justified to those characters because of what they think is right. Right? So, for instance, having read a little bit more of Heaven Official's Blessing than ye, right? One of the things you mentioned was in our main character's introduction is that very, very quickly after he ascended for the first time, he returned to his homeland in order to save his kingdom. The reason he did that is, of course, because he was a 17-year-old boy who loved his people and his land, and he wasn't prepared to become a almighty god that had no investment in the human realm anymore, right? Like, the interesting thing about a lot of Chinese gods, or all Chinese gods, are that they were people before. They are people who have ascended due to cultivating their spiritual energy. So people make good and bad decisions all of the time. They are not inherently, like when you look at Western religions, an almighty power of God who is, you know, all loving or all whatever, that is above judgment, right? Like, these are people who have become so powerful, so disciplined, so whatever, that they have been recognized by the heavens to join the camaraderie of the other gods. But gods do bad things all the time. They are not, you know, all powerful, perfect beings upon the world. Comparatively as well, again, not to keep bringing up Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation, our main character in that, he is, well, all the characters really are war criminals. They've all done horrible things. But for our main character, the reason he made the decisions that he did were very much justified, and very much because he wanted to right an injustice he saw in the world that he lived in. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that he is perfect and that he shouldn't be, like, he killed a lot of people. He killed lots of people. But it's the understanding of, like, how, where is that line? And also, how do you then, as a writer, make that kind of character likable or relatable or someone you want to read about? So that kind of circles back to our main character in this novel, Xielian. He ascended very, very young. He didn't have really any life experience. He was a very spoilt, very doted upon prince who was loved by his people, loved by his family, and was, oh my god, he was such a fucking uptight, righteous 17-year-old who thought he knew everything in the world, as you do when you're 17, right? He's like, I got all the answers, don't worry. Mm-hmm. So when he saw his people being stricken by plague, when he saw a ethnic war / genocide erupting within the kingdom that he loved, and saw the people, his parents notably, that he loved, he couldn't sit back and not get involved, even though that is the expectation for a god. You don't get involved in human trifles. You just let the humans do whatever the hell they want, because it's never going to be a good thing when a god gets involved. Mm-hmm. And so he made a lot of mistakes that he felt, again, were justified because he just didn't have any experience. He didn't have any foresight to what his involvement could then mean. Mm-hmm. Which also then had roll-on effects to him from going from being, like, one of the most beloved gods in the heavens to just being a nobody, no name, no one wants to be involved with you. Every single shrine to you has been destroyed. Like, you are a god of calamity more than a god of, like, all the good stuff mm-hmm. that you were before. Which of then influenced his decisions in the interim to that second ascension where he got up there and just wrecked shit. That's why he got kicked out 30 minutes after that happened. Yeah. They're like, oh my god. He went up with a chip on his shoulder. He was gonna destroy heaven. And they're like, oh my god, oh, we gotta get you out of here. And then over those 800 years, or I think it was like 700 after that, he then gained some maturity. He grew up, right? And it's easy to gain some maturity when you are an immortal being that doesn't age. And you, over eight centuries, learn, meet so many more people, learn so much about the world around you that you can't, like, Shailen currently, as a person who is really, like, he almost takes pride in the fact that he's a scrap god, right? Like, he doesn't have the shame around it that he absolutely would have had it when he ascended the first time. He's not above, you know, scrounging the trash for dinner. He is not above just doing the smallest, most mundane tasks to help somebody and to gain, you know, a relationship with someone, which again is a very different person than who he was as a bratty teenager when he was crown prince. And oh my god, the other thing, again, Ray, you don't know, but they introduced the concept of, like, these four ghost kings, I guess. This is not quite the right word. But there's Crimson Rain Flower, who is Hua Cheng.
Crimson Rain Salt Flower, yeah.
Yes. There is the Black Water, who is also... there's a lot... okay, I'm not going to talk about that. That's the plot twist there. You have the... white, there's like a white faced calamity that's been gone, just been disappeared for centuries. Nobody knows what happened to him. And then there's like the I always call him the Green Goblin. He has a name. Don't know.
Shirong.
He
the green that ghost. Character.
Yes. And he's the one that initially they think, well, actually, they're one of the mystery, one of the ghost issues that Xieling is sent to investigate, they think is Hua Cheng. It turns out to be this green goblin guy.
This fucker.
Yes. And oh my, that fucker, very quickly you learn, is not just some, oh, he's such a pain in the ass, but also he is Xieling's, maternal cousin. So they grew, he was a brat then and he is a brat now, and he used to fucking idolize Shailen so much when they were humans. He loved that boy so much. He was younger, but he's like, oh my gosh, you are the prince, everything you do is correct, but just also like the shittiest person, like so bad. So much so that Shailen's like, I do not want to, like, this is an issue. This kid is actually psychopathic. I don't, this is not good. And therefore, at some point, he became a ghostly, horrific monster. So bad. And then when Shailen finds out, he's like, oh my fucking god, this guy, why are you still alive? So, yeah, that was fun. That was a fun, interesting character dynamic that you probably wouldn't see coming. So, basically what I'm saying is that there's a lot of really fun, interesting characters in Tianguan Sifu. We haven't even mentioned Lord Windmaster, who's also a very notable character.
He only shows up as a girl in the first book.
Yeah, and that's the you will, if you do come across any kind of fan art of this character, they are like the genderqueer darling of the fandom.
Excellent.
I, without saying too much, will warn you to maybe not get too attached. Because the other thing about Danmei is that there is a lot of tragedy that happens all of the time. Bad things happen to people regardless of whether they're bad or good people.
She's too happy. So she's like happy-go-lucky all the time.
We'll leave that for then. Long story short, I really enjoy Xielian because he is a very complicated character with a lot of character growth over the course of the series, even when just what I've read. He's also, like, I think a lot of people initially think he is just very, what's the word?
Just from reading the first book, like, definitely with, like, Hua Chong, it's like, I think he knew, like, very early on, he just, like, was sort of reserving judgment, is the impression that I got. A lot of the time, that's what he's doing, is, like, you know, he won't let show everything that he knows, because he's, you know, just ascended for the third time, and he's trying to figure out what the situation is like now, so he's sort of biding his time, biting his tongue a little bit, to make sure that he has the full picture before he says anything. That's, like, the impression that I get from the first book. He's very, like, I mean, you know, it's like, if you've seen any, like, martial arts movies, like, this is a character type, right? Like, Wuxia, he's very worldly and, you know, has all of the wisdom of being 800 years old and having cultivated his spiritual power to such an extent. He's wise. He comes across as that kind of character to me.
The reason I noted that or framed it that way maybe is because out of all of the MXTX protagonists, I think he, for a long time, by the fandom, was seen as, like, you know, kind of the pure uke of the of the bunch. Wei Wuxian from Modao Zushi is too much of a fucking chaotic bisexual to think that of. And then Shen Wan, or Shen Qunqi from Scum Villain, is so deep in the closet, he could, in the most unreliable narrator, that he's hanging out in Narnia and being like, this is normal, this is fine, which is a very different dynamic.
Well, but I will say it is very clear that Heaven Official's Blessing is at its core the story of a bottom learning his place. But
well, I've told you, Ray, that this boy hadn't ever even, he thought he was impotent his whole life. His whole life, he was just like, I guess I just am impotent. That's just my problem that I have to deal with. Until one day he has to get very warm
tall,
and cuddly.
Tall, sexy, masculine demon man.
And his goth boyfriend in a coffin and is like, wait a minute, that certain body part doesn't react like that normally. What's going on? And you're like, sir, you may be 800 years old, but I'm sorry. Like, legitimately, when he was alive, I mean, he's still alive, but when he was a human, he was noted and, like, respected so highly because his path to cultivation had to do with purity of the mind and body, basically to not drink, not imbibe in worldly pleasures, So he was
he just
celibate,
seems
like
super uninterested in these concubines for some reason.
Yeah, all of the every time. I mean, he has he's a prince, right? He has his pick of beautiful young women who are like, please, please let me join your harem, and he's just like, you seem nice, but I'm just really focused on my cultivation, sorry. And nobody questioned that in a 17-year-old boy. They're like, oh, his willpower, he's just so smart and enlightened, which again is why he got, you know, fucking plucked up to heaven at 17. But that was not the case. He was just incredibly gay and didn't have any any clue. But also, to be fair, a lot of the men in his life were not a hot goth boyfriend that, you know, was the biggest simp to ever be written.
He just had to meet a guy who could absolutely fucking rock him. That's what he needed. So
exactly.
But no, I don't think he's, like, stupid. I think he's very smart. But I definitely have seen that from, like, going in, I thought he was going to be a very different character than the character that I actually got, like, reading it. And I was happy about that because he ended up being a lot more interesting than just, like, your typical mewling, doe-eyed uke. He's got a lot more going on than that, so...
Again, I think that's part of a lot of appeal for Danmei. You don't have, and the terms in Danmei Chinese fandom are shu for the bottom or the uke, and then gong for the top or the seme. They're all very interchangeable. And just typically the main character is the bottom. Not always, but usually. And then the male lead is, you know, his partner, typically the top. Mm-hmm. Not always the case. So if you float about in, you know, fan spaces, you'll see people use, like, MC and ML to mean main character, male lead type of stuff. So, yeah, I think if nothing else, Xielin is a really fun character to read about, and he is also he has a very dry sense of humor that I don't think necessarily people might not pick up on right away, but he is very, very, very biting in his humor, and it sometimes takes characters like, oh shit, I didn't expect you to say that. That's not very nice.
He says it like it is, you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
He's, as we've established, he's not very concerned about reputation at this point in his immortal life. He's just like, okay, well, I've been around the block a few times. This guy's just an idiot. That's, you know, it's not good, it's not bad, it's just how it is. It's just fact. I'm going to put all the translation questions together for the end, because we got a few. So I'm going to skip that next one from Rin 4 right now, and go with, also from Rin, what other titles would you recommend to people new to Danmei or would like something similar to TGCF? G!
As I said, although I am probably the more experienced Danmei enjoyer in this particular podcast, I have barely brushed the surface of what is available. There are probably people much more informed to give this a proper answer. But I will say, if you are new to Danmei, and although I am biased because this is how I got into this whole thing in the first place, I do think that probably Modao Zushi, Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation, is easier as a first introduction. There's a lot more characters and there's a lot more politics and a lot more of that, but I will say that, like I said earlier, the adaptation, the animated version, is probably the easiest way to do that. If you like dedicated, you know, male leads who are simping for the main characters, that's all of MXTX's works. I also find the plot of that one different to Heaven Official's Blessing, but also it's involved enough that, you know, it's satisfying to read through or to watch through the whole thing. There's a lot of really good twists in that one. The other one, which is not an MXTX work, but oh, if you want to fucking simp, dude, this one is Golden Terrace. That one has been released by Peach Flower House. I mentioned it earlier. I'm not 100% of the way through, but I find that the main character in that one reminds me a lot of Xielian, in that he's very often underestimated. That's the word I'm looking for. Underestimated. Mm-hmm. Because he is ostensibly the bottom of this pairing. It's something that is a little bit of a sore point for Xielian, in that he's like, everyone forgets I'm a martial god. Like, guys, I do know how to fight. Like, this is, I am not just...
Just because I don't have that much spiritual power right now.
And just because my robes hide my just absolute sculpted abs... And doesn't mean that I don't know how to throw a punch. In Golden Terrace, our main character is young, vibrant, very handsome, and I don't want to say waifish, that's not the right word, but he's certainly the most feminine of the couple. But he was, this whole story, he was a general at the front lines between what is the main China, basically, and a bordering nation. He's been in combat for 7-8 years and is incredibly intelligent, incredibly strong, incredibly good fighter. Also, similarly, like, has a very strong sense of justice when he was young, that he had to adjust as he got older, obviously. The character, the relationship dynamic, initially seems very different from Tianguan Sifu, but it becomes very obvious very quickly that our male lead, is just absolutely has been in love with this guy forever, even though they've been at odds for quite a while, and also they're kind of notorious within the city, so like you can't keep them in the same room because they'll be at each other's throats. The premise to that one is that after injury, or actually after an assassination attempt on our main character's life, his legs are crushed by a big boulder. So he is in a period of recovery. It's not expected for him to ever fully recover. And also his kind of faction, or the army that he leads, is a little bit of a threat to the current emperor, so he doesn't actually want... The emperor isn't... Like, there's a question as to whether or not the emperor wasn't, like, the one to order this. There's a lot of politics happening in that one as well. But they live in a society wherein, if you are of a certain social rank... if you are a man, you can get married to a man and it be legally recognized as your husband. So basically the premise is that our character has gone back to the city to recover after this injury, after being not paralyzed, but he's had major impact on his legs. He cannot walk without assistance. But he's summoned, he goes back to the city, is summoned by the emperor, is told by the emperor, hey, you are going to be marrying this guy who you can't stand, but, you know, you can't question me, one, because I'm the emperor, two, because he's basically, like, my right-hand man. He's part of the like, royal guard, I guess. And so you don't really have a choice. And so to save face, he's like, all right, he agrees to it. And then you find, oh my gosh, this guy is so head over heels doting to, who ostensibly the man who becomes his husband, not our main character. The male lead is just absolutely dedicated to his husband, future husband's recovery and care, and they very quickly fall in love. But I really like their dynamic, namely because although our main character is, you know, the bottom of this situation, he always refers to his husband as his lovely wife, to everyone. And he just, like, rolls with it. He's like, that they never argue about it. And so currently in the part of the story that I am in, they've been separated for a very long time because of war, because of stuff happening. And the only way that they're able to even communicate that they're, like, still alive with each other is our main character shoots down, or, like, injures, I guess, a goose, which is migrating, and ties a note onto its leg, and then once it is felled closer to the capital, someone finds the note, and the note is basically just like, how is my wife doing? And you're like, brilliant, I love it! It's really good. If you're wanting, like, a series that is, it has a lot of politics and plot happening, but the reason you read it is because of just the relationship. That's the one. And they have a similar dynamic to the couple in Heaven Official's Blessing. So that would be my recommendation if you've already read all of the MXTX novels. And that's maybe not a surprise for people who are familiar with lots of Danmei, but if you are someone who is following just, like, legally available English releases in the same way that I am, and you haven't really ventured past the Seven Seas works, then check out Golden Terrace. It is very, very good.
Sounds up my alley. Okay, so next we've got some questions from at Takuto Anime Cafe. With Volume 1 containing so much of this franchise's known iconography, what do you think of the actual plot beyond Volume 1? G?
So, as mentioned a little bit earlier, what Taku was saying in regards to franchise's known iconography, namely, first and foremost, is the front cover of that first novel. It's the meeting between our two characters. One, whilst our main character is in wedding reds, he's cross-dressing in order to catch the person doing stuff.
The ghosty ghost,
exactly. And that's, I mean, the wedding reds are such a huge, not just in the series, but, you know, when you can get your characters both in red, that's always, like, symbolic. They are married now. They've dedicated their lives to each other. It's a big moment. The other notable iconography, especially in that first novel, is the or the gift of a ring from Hua Cheng to, or from Sun Lang to Xielian. I don't know if this was inherently obvious to you, Ray, and it's not maybe immediately explained, but prior to that, a conversation was happening where the only way you can kill a ghost king is by destroying the ashes. And so they're having a conversation as to, like, well, then anyone who's a ghost king really must, like, hide, you know, have a safe place so that they don't get destroyed.
So the way the novel ends is, like, he literally just drops his ring with him and then leaves, and that's the end of the novel, so nothing's explained about that. But when he's explaining about the ashes and stuff, he's like, well, actually, we have this, like, tradition in the ghostly realm of, like, you know, the only person that we give our ashes to is, like, our lover, so.
Well, someone we trust with our lives, basically.
Yeah.
And so, as might now be obvious, Hua Cheng has left his ashes with Xielin, and they are in that ring. Because that is... that is the, you know, the person that he trusts his life with. And
you're romantic.
Exactly. So that's, those are the two, like, notable bits of iconography that Taku is talking about. It's not a spoiler, because, as I said, it's like... not barely brushing the surface of what this series is. What do I think about the actual plot beyond volume one? Oh my god, holy shit. Strap in for a wild ride, because I'm trying to avoid, I know that Ray doesn't really mind spoilers, but I am aware that there's readers or listeners out there who probably are in a similar situation to Ray, where they've only read some or all of the English releases from Seven Seas and nothing else. I will say, so the second novel, or the second web novel version, which starts in book two of the English release, is flashback to Xielian as the Heavenly Prince, right? Like, as this human prince before he ascends. It's his first meeting with a child that he saves, which is also a very iconic scene. It's also something that is mentioned in that big prologue, where he jumps from a parade in order to catch a child falling from the walls of the castle, well, of the big kingdom, which in of itself was a really bad omen, because that whole parade was to do with luck and prosperity, and he interrupted that whole thing in order to save a child, right? Like, it's not even the trolley problem, right? But if he was more selfish and he allowed that child to die, perhaps all of the bad things that happened to his kingdom wouldn't have happened. So he changed fate with that one act of rescue, and completely changed the path of that child's life. So that's, I think, the backstory as to who Xielian was as a young person, and, like, his outlook on life and his desperation and conflict with trying to do the best thing for the humans that he left behind, even if it went against all of the rules of the gods. It was really, really good to read. Book three. I hope you packed your tissues, because that's the one where it gets dark. It gets really, really, if you like certain side characters, then I'm sorry. I'm sorry, because your heart is going to be shattered into a million pieces and maybe not recover, because there's a lot of bad stuff that happens to a lot of people. The other thing that I also will say, and we've talked a lot about how, like, Danmei is very plot-focused. It's also, like, super violent. There is a lot of death and destruction and just horrific, horrific things happening on the page. It doesn't shy away from describing just some awful stuff. Book 2 also has that as well, just by the way. Again, we're talking about a kingdom that is not only besieged by plague, but also then has a war. It's a rough read sometimes. This isn't always going to be hand-holding and, like, ring exchanges in the park. I think it's really good. It is... I personally think that when you have those sorts of... those elements of just deep emotional pain, it makes it... you remember them, right? Like, it's a big contrast between some of the other more, like, slice of life or even, you know, ghost mystery of the week stuff. Kind of a similar... and this is... they are very different genres and very, very different things. But, like... it's kind of like in a comedy manga, like Gintama, right? Where it's all fun and games, and then you get to the sad backstory, and it just ruins you, because you're like, oh, I'm not expecting these characters in this situation. It's that much more effective. That's kind of what happens, but on a more brutal scale. But also, in saying that... Book 3 of the web novel, which is books 3 and 4 of the English novels, they also have some other really iconic iconography, namely our characters having to share, well, Huacheng having to share his spiritual energy with Xielin, so you get a little kissing in this that book. That's also when they are stuck in a coffin together, and our male lead our main character discovers that he is maybe a bit more maybe he doesn't have a personal impotence problem. Maybe it was just
his surprise. It was homosexuality all along.
Exactly. Also, after that scene, because they're floating in a coffin, because they have to, like, that's the only way they can get across the Black Sea because of, you know, stuff. And they capsize. They end up washed up on a beach, and then we have, oh my gosh, you guys, mouth to mouth with CPR. We gotta resuscitate Huacheng, even though
covering all their bases, man.
Exactly. And even though Huacheng is a ghost that doesn't breathe and probably doesn't need to. Xielin, shut up. Oh my god, what do I do? No, he even says it in his mind. He's like, there's no rational thought except for, oh no, he's knocked out, I need to, like, CPR. And even though in his mind he's like, but he's the Ghost King, he's not like he breathes anyway. So, you know, you get the full, I don't know if any of you, well, I know you have Ray, but I don't know if everyone listening here is a free Iwatobi Swim Club fan, but that, if you want, like, actual payoff for a CPR scene on the beach, then, you know, Heaven Official's blessings got you covered. I've also seen an animatic for that before I watched, Heaven Official's Blessing. That was fun. I was like, again, I don't know who any of these characters are, but more. And it stayed stored in my brain until I knew that that was an actual scene. I'm like, heh, 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 heh. Thank you. So yeah.
I love the tropes. I literally messaged G because in the first book, it's like San Long comes to stay at the shrine or whatever, right? And they get there and oh my god, there was only one bed. I like how the other two guys show up and they're like, wait, have you two been, like, just snuggling up on the same straw mat? And Xie Lian is just like, yeah, what, is that a problem for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the other trope is that Xie Lian is horrible at cooking. Couldn't, if he looks at a vegetable, it makes it worse. And everyone, like, literally gets just spiritual poisoning taking one bite of anything that he concocts. Except for our lovely San Lang, who's like, this is delicious. Thank you for this lovely meal. So literally anyone else... And literally anyone else in the world would probably die, unless they were a heaven, like, a god and or ghost. Hua Cheng, no issue. It's just like, yes, thank you for feeding me that purple bubbling goo that you have said is congee. I love it. Thank you so much. but again, Xie Lian is a... He was a scrap god. He was scrounging in the trash for old food. He has an iron stomach, so he has... He's like, no, this is probably fine. It is not probably fine, dear listeners, but you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it if it was Hua Cheng reviewing that restaurant. So, yeah.
Okay, so... I'm wanting to, like, speed through some of these, because we still haven't gotten to the translation, but, we got a whole bunch from At Storied Shelves. Which cover is your favorite? How would you rank them all? I didn't really look at the other covers, because I didn't really want the spoilers, so I just didn't look.
I... really like volume one's cover. Again, it's the wedding reds. It's beautiful. It's very striking. Volume four has our couple kissing on the front. No, it's sorry, exchanging spiritual power. Very passionately. So if you are wanting that, that's also good. Really, all of the covers are very beautiful. I'm trying to remember the artist's name. But yeah, one of the things I will say is that, Heaven Official's Blessing, compared to the other two MXTX titles, uses the artwork that is used in other markets. I think the Taiwanese market, they share covers. It might be one of the other, it might be the Thai market, I don't really remember. But with Modal Zoshi and with Scum Villain Self Saving System, they used fan artists from the wider global fandom and commissioned them to do the covers. That might have just been a case because they didn't, like, other markets for those titles didn't have consistent covers across. I don't know. These covers use art that is recognizable for people who have been in the fandom for a long time, and there are different covers depending on, like, what language you're buying them in, but they aren't completely new covers created for the English release in the same way that Scum Villain and Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation is. There's fan art, there's other fan artists who do the interior artwork, but not the actual outside cover.
Speaking of which,
I just also want to say volume two is also a very probably a lot of people really like, and it's beautiful. They're all beautiful, but Volume 2 has our Heavenly Prince rescuing the small child, which again is a very iconic scene. So if that is something, if that's one of your favorite scenes, maybe that ranks really highly on your personal list. Anyway, continue.
They also ask, any favorite interior art?
What about you, Ray?
Me? Just from the first volume. I like the gay one where he's sucking venom out of Shaylian's wrist or whatever. Classic. Classic.
From...
yeah.
That first volume, I would say, I mean, there's a really lovely picture or piece of art of them in the straw, like in the hay cart together.
Mm-hmm.
That has really good atmosphere to it. I think also the first piece of artwork in the novel is Shaylian at cafe, that's not the right word, but he's at the eatery and he's just like sitting and wondering what to do before those two strange god underlings show up, and a silver butterfly comes and just is like, hey. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that piece of artwork sets the tone very well for that first adventure, I guess. So, yeah.
They ask, which volume was the strongest for you, and which did you enjoy the most? I mean, I think I'd have to go with maybe the first one.
First volume? Right, that's such a surprise. I would have thought after
truly,
everything you
truly
said.
Truly the best out of the ones that I've read.
Volume-wise, I don't know. I do think that the first volume sets the stage, does the groundwork of character introduction. I do think that subsequent volumes are more interesting or more engaging or more involved. Like, it just, I don't know, it's a story, right? It builds off of everything that it has come before it. Hopefully, that's how, you know, narratives typically work. So the backstory in volume 2 / part of volume 3 is phenomenal. All of that horrible stuff in the third novel /3/4 is only so effective because of what all of the groundwork that had been done in previous books. I would say that probably out of all of them, that as of right now, the backstory section has been the most powerful as a standalone piece. Although I just said it builds off of the previous stuff. But, like, as a whole, it that really gave a huge amount of dimension, most notably to our main character, but also our other main character, and the decisions that have led them to where they are right now, and the people that they are right now. And there's more to come, I know, as well, because it only covers a little bit of that 800 years.
They also ask, do you have any favorite passages? I don't really. I don't think.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that, like, jumps out inherently. I enjoy things in the moment, and then I'll forget, and then be returned to them, like, oh yeah, that was really good.
As someone who gravitates to, like, very beautiful prose and reads a lot of, like, literary fiction...
Mm-hmm.
When I'm reading this type of, like, genre fiction, like, there are exceptions where it's, like, it's very, very beautifully written, and maybe MXDX is one of those writers in Chinese, and it wasn't, like, captured in the English. I have no way of knowing, because I do not read Mandarin. But for me, her writing style to me comes across more like utilitarian. It's there to fulfill a purpose of telling this story, as opposed to like trying to paint a beautiful picture with the words. In my opinion, I'm sure there's a lot of people who are like, this is incredibly beautiful and poetic, and they're valid. So, yeah, I don't think the writing stood out to me enough that I was like bookmarking passages. And then, if you're familiar with other Don May, what do you think could be licensed in the future? I think I'll put that one over to you, but it sounds like maybe you're more just familiar with stuff that's coming out already.
Yeah, I am not the person to ask. Again, there is a huge community of people who follow things, not only in original language, but like various fan translations. The one QJJ, I don't know what. Also, there's, if you don't know, there's like a bajillion acronyms for titles and character names in Danmei fandom. Kuang Jinju is the one that I see a lot of buzz around. A lot of people, it's like the hot topic right now. And I would suspect, whenever I see that kind of popularity, that it will be inevitably licensed at some point. I don't know if it's finished, if it's on... Well, I think it's ongoing in the Chinese, so maybe we won't see it licensed for a long time, but if Danmei continues its popularity and its growth, that will be next on the list at some point. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that I want the gay lady novels to be licensed, because there's a couple of those that I'm aware of. That, wait, Banhe? Oh, again, so it's not Danmei, it's got its own name. And there's a couple of those that I'm aware of that are super duper popular, and I want to read them. I want to read them. So really, I am hoping for Danmei to open up the door for other Chinese fiction, notably the gay lady stuff, because I will read it. I'm sure lots of people will read it. And I feel like it fits within Seven Seas' library catalog of titles. So I just
feel like it would get a lot of buzz just inherently too, so
yeah, exactly. Cross my fingers, cross my toes that we see some more ladies who are married to each other in the future.
Hell yeah. All right, I think probably last topic for this episode is going to be the one we keep hinting at. I mean, I've been hinting at it a lot, but I don't think it's actually going to take that much time to like go through the issues that I had, because they're pretty simple. But we did get a lot of questions. There has been a lot of controversy surrounding the official translations, with a lot of people, I think, feeling that they were amateurish or just not very good, not very well edited, which is... I'm going to say that's more or less where my complaints reside, is in I think it could have used another round of editing more than anything else. So we got a few different questions that all are about kind of on a similar page from @SunlitLake. In your opinion, how does the official / legal translation of the novel stack compared to the graphic novel adaptation and the animated adaptation? I loved the animated one, but was put off the LN, light novel, after I noped out of Grandmaster due to the IMO incredibly poor localization. We also had Rin asked us, what's your thoughts on the translation? I know people have had issues with the Seven Seas books and the quality of official Danmei translation in general. And then Takuto Anime Cafe also asked us thoughts on Seven Seas translation work and physical releases. I read this on an ebook, so I can't really speak to the physical release, personally. But translation, though. yeah, it's, again, and I'm speaking about this as someone who is not very familiar with Danmei fandom. From what I gather, especially from what G was mentioning, maybe they're, you know, as anal, frankly, as a certain subset of anime fans with, shall we say, ill-informed takes on localization in English. But I don't know. I'm new to Danmei entirely. I'm not familiar with the fandom. I can only speak from, like, my own personal experience as a fan translator, and as a fan of, like, translated fiction. And that is that it's just very unwieldy, the text here. And it's hard for me to say, like, you know, how much of it is, like, flaws in MXTX's writing, because, again, I am not familiar with the original. I can't be. No plans to learn Mandarin, so. Just in terms of, like, reading it as a book, as a reader of English who has picked up a book that is written in English for an English market, the sentences are often, there's a lot of run-ons, there's a lot of trying to cram way too much information into one sentence, which just makes for what feels like it should be much more breezy, like, you know, fantasy writing. Sorry. Makes it so that I found myself having to reread sentences 5, 6, 7, 8 times just to figure out what was being conveyed to me. Which, you know, again, maybe MXTX has a very unwieldy writing style. I have no idea. But the impression that I got was one, like, from, as a fan translator from Japanese to English, that these are mistakes that I often make in the first draft of translations, where it's like, this is a specific quirk of Japanese that I have no idea if it exists in Mandarin as well, but Japanese sentences tend to be longer and composed of a lot of different parts than English sentences, where often, like, splitting something into 2 or 3 sentences is going to make a lot more sense to a reader. Whereas in Japanese, they'll employ, like, essentially the Japanese version of a comma to be, like, a pause. Like, this is a full clause right here, and then we're moving on to a different idea in the second part of the sentence. So often in, like, a first draft, if I'm translating, I'm going to end up with these very long sentences that I then have to go through and think about, does this sentence really need to be too long or this long? Or are there two or three separate ideas here that I can chop into shorter sentences that are easier for an English reader to read and feel more natural to an English reader? The other thing is that often what makes sentences very long and unwieldy in translation for me, in my experience, is just the desire to convey as much of the nuance of the original as possible. When maybe, like, there's a verb used in the original that just doesn't have, like, an equivalent in English that carries the same nuance. And this brings me to adverbs, a writer's greatest enemy. So it was pretty common reading through this where it's like I would go through a sentence and be like, I think there's like four adverbs in this one sentence. And I don't know if you, G, have ever been yelled at by your English teachers for using too many adverbs, but I certainly have. Like, for example, I took a screenshot of this one sentence just as like one of many examples throughout the book, but it's like, when they came closer to the ground, Xie Lian could finally see clearly that this round structure was actually a giant boulder. And it's just like, maybe we needed one of those adverbs, you know? The other ones, it's like, really what you need to be doing is like, and this will happen in my first drafts, right? I will notice that there's, when I'm going back through, that there's way too many fucking adverbs. Because I'm like, I can't think of a verb equivalent. Well, and also like Japanese just uses more adverbs and it sounds more natural in Japanese. So I might start by translating that directly. As well as just trying to be like, well, this verb doesn't quite have the nuance that I want. So I add an adverb to make it the nuance more close to the Japanese. But then I go through again and I'm like, okay, but this sentence has three different adverbs in it and it sounds bad when I read it out loud. So I'll chop out, like, honestly, as many of them as I can. And maybe try to replace the verb with something that's more precise in its nuance, or rephrase things so that I can get across more of that nuance with less words. And so that's what leads me to feel like maybe this is just a draft that needed another look through. But, you know, I can't know for sure. I can't know like how rushed the translator was, or, you know, if how rushed the editing job was on this. There's no way for me to know. So, but that was, I guess, the impression that I got as a reader. It just feels very, yeah, muddled, I guess. Like it just needed some cleaning up, and it might have been a much better translation than it is. But as it is, it hinders the reading experience more than I think an official translation ought to.
So what you're saying is it sounds like a fan translation, which would you be surprised to hear is exactly what it is. So when the MXTX novels were announced, as being licensed, they made a big deal about incorporating or having the many fans who have already dedicated so much of their time and creativity to these novels, getting them involved, right? Fan translations already existed, at least for Heaven Official's Blessing and Grandmasters of Demonic Cultivation. I don't know about Scum Villain. I wouldn't be surprised if that also had an existing fan translation. A lot of these books do. That's how they get popular in the first place, because people want to read them. So they made a big deal about having those translators who had already worked on these titles and released them being brought in to translate for Seven Seas.
Yeah, which I think is fine, but
No.
you
I
need.
agree with I you need some oversight, and what I think, and I 100% agree with you, Ray, that this is a it is not to a level of quality that is expected from a main publisher like Simon and Schuster, aka Seven Seas. This is not to the quality that people expect from a mainstream publisher. And so the reason I bring up that, they made a big deal about fan translators being part of the team for this, is because when that was announced, everyone loved it. They thought it was a fantastic idea. It is. It's a good idea. It's a nice good idea to have these people who
It's a good idea to have them be part of the team. Of the team.
Yes. And so the other thing that I want to bring up is that, again, a lot of existing Danmei fans in English are reading these fan translations and the machine translations, which, as we know, are horrible. You know, plugging stuff into Google Translate is not going to give you a good time. But when you have so many of these novels being released, and not nearly as many teams of people, fans or otherwise, able to dedicate the time to giving a informed translation, desperate times call for desperate measures. Personally, I wouldn't go to that trouble, but a lot of people want to just read and enjoy themselves. That's fine. Cool. So I think that a lot of English Danmei fans have already read a lot of stuff with horrible translation. And so they don't, like, I look at it at the same time that, I look at Danmei in the same way. It's in a place currently where manga was 30, 40 years ago, where webtoon, like Korean comics, were 20 years ago or 10, 20 years ago. Now Danmei is in its infancy as being a English market, right? So if you make the comparison to manga, there's a reason why so many phrases, terms of phrase, so many titles like senpai and whatever are maintained within translations.
It can't be helped.
Exactly. The reason those are maintained and have become standard is because of fan translators, scanlators, just doing a really quick translation, putting it out into the world, and people en masse reading it or enjoying it. So when you have small things like, you know, Zolo versus Zoro in the One Piece translation, or, you know, people insisting that every single manga must retain suffixes like san and shan, even if it's like a fucking fantasy European setting.
Edward-kun.
Exactly. That's the type of existence that Danmei is kind of in right now. And I don't think that it's inherently wrong to keep certain like suffixes and titles and stuff that for Japanese and Korean as well media has just kind of like, you're part of the fandom or you're part of someone who enjoys that media, you know the terms, right?
Yeah, I actually like that stuff because it's like, you know, it to some extent, right? Because it's like so many like manga terms have like made it into mainstream just geek, right, nerd culture parlance, that it's like, I think that it's entirely fair to want to, you know, take works from your own culture, this other culture that has this media that you love, and try to bring those into English sort of subculture and fan parlance. I think that that's totally fair, and I think it's really fun and interesting. Personally, as a reader, to an extent, again.
So my point is that there are a lot of, so when this news of the fan translators being in charge of this new translation, that was, the news was very overwhelmingly positively received, right? So the other thing is that obviously Seven Seas, there was a really quick turnaround for these books. The first mm-hmm. volumes of all of them were released like months after the, like, and I mean months as in like 2-3 months after the initial announcement. The first volumes of all of them came out the same month. And then after complaints from fans, they decided to stagger their releases a little bit more in order to give them a more thorough overview and check. So there's, I know that when, I think it was Murazushi, when that first came out, Katrina Lidalkis, is that her name? Who's a translator for Japanese media, she did a big thread about kind of the issues that she had with the translation and how it didn't sound very professional, and which is all true. And as a professional and someone who has a background, like she has qualifications as a translator, it was in her right. And she didn't even say it was a bad translation, just that it was very much written for existing fans that knew the quirks of what they were reading, had probably read it before, and so it wasn't being scrutinized by existing fans on the same level that, like, nowadays light novels and manga and webtoons are, because, again, Danma is in this current era wherein, like, if you've read, and I mentioned already, Holic or that first Death Note light novel, any of the early light novel stuff, they are not very good. Just like, full stop. But at least in that case, Japanese to English translators were much more well established than just due to manga than the Chinese to English translators for, like, this kind of publishing. It's just a very different framework. We don't have the amount of people studying Chinese to, or Mandarin, to become English translators in the same way that, you know, we have so many people learning Japanese because they want to be translators, because they want to live in Japan, because they want to do, you know, all, they want to live their anime dreams, right? Chinese media hasn't gotten to that point, and it won't for quite a while. So we are very reliant on a certain number of, I'm sure, existing professional Chinese to English translators who are in the literary space or in, you know, interpretation kind of stuff. We don't have the huge market in the same way. So by relying on fan translations, you are bringing in someone who at least is already familiar with the media that they are being asked to translate, retranslate. Again, that very fast turnover was also another big thing. I also think that, so when all of the issues, specifically with Grandmaster of Demonic Cultivation, that first novel, because what they did was, rather than have the people who did the fan translation for that one do the translation, they got the translator for Heaven Official's Blessing to work on Modazushi. I don't really know the reason why. It might just be they didn't want to pay more people. It might just be because they thought that the existing translation needed a real overhaul. I can't speak to it. I don't know. All I know is that there was a lot of people put into a professional setting who weren't professionally trained, right? They don't have the background that nowadays a lot of Japanese translators do. Or Korean translators as well. And at the same time, because of that push to publish so fast, the editing was probably not as rigorous because they said, hey, we have an existing translation. We're just going to clean it up a little bit. We don't need to go and rewrite and like really examine what needs to be changed. Because mm-hmm. our deadline is in 3 weeks. We don't have time for that. As I said, there's been a lot of upset over that. And so Seven Seas has readjusted their schedule. It's why a lot of these books have taken longer to come out. That is a good thing. Mm-hmm. I will say that at least with Heaven Official's Blessing, and I've read, for all of the Danmei that I've read, they are serviceable books. I do think there's a improvement over time. This is very much, again, the teething stages of a very young medium, maybe, in English. Very young market in English. Comparatively. And again, and I feel some Danmei fans took great offense to the idea that things needed to be in changed or improved or weren't, you know, perfect as is when with the Seven Seas releases. They are very devoted and vocal fans. There are people who were extremely upset that they perceived certain passages to have been removed. Maybe, again, they were, just due to time frames, things got skipped or lost. People who are hyper aware of changes between fan translation and the official translation, that's just, you're not going to please everyone. But then, of course, there's also the people who are almost vitriolic to any question that things needed to be changed, again, because I think the standards for reading Danmei in English are so low due to the existing machine translation and fan translation out there that anything is an improvement. They're just happy to have mm-hmm. the book in hand. They don't care about quality. And again, this is not inherent just to Danmei. This was what the light novel scene was 20 years ago, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have seen that many people complaining about, and this is ostensibly just a badly written book anyway, but if Shakugan or Shana had continued, I don't think people would be complaining about the translation. Fans just wanted it in hand. Those later novels of the 12 Kingdoms, they were horrible, but I think people were just desperate to have it. Plus, you know, Tokyo Pop had no money, but that's neither here nor there. I will say, of all of the Danmei publishers, that Seven Seas is by far the best. I already mentioned, I haven't read Violacte stuff, and they might be in a little bit of a different position because they are also a Chinese publisher. They put out a lot of Danmei in the Chinese, so they might have a more established team who can give a better translation into English. That being said, I don't expect that to be the case, just quietly. Mm-hmm. Just because you can translate from one language to the other doesn't mean you are a good writer, right? We know this to be mm-hmm. the fact. Just because you can, to be a good translator, you have to actually understand how to write a story, not just copy a sentence word for word, because that's just not, you lose so much nuance.
Yep.
And that also ties into something you said, Ray, about you not being sure about MXTX's writing style to be very utilitarian. I, again, can't speak to it and that I haven't read the original language, but I do know that MXTX is, like, famous for her very poetic writing style. And she really draws on a lot of folklore and just cultural stuff that gives a real lyricism to her work. Mm-hmm. It's something that's why she got so popular, right? She is a very good writer. And see,
I wouldn't have known that from the translation at all.
Exactly. And I think that's partially because we have people translating who are not inherently as strong of riders as MXTX. And they also didn't have the time and or money to hire someone who did have that level of skill, which is a shame. It really is a shame. I can't speak, again, to the other Seven Seas series that have been put out. I know that a lot of people were very happy with the Urha, aka Husky and White Cat season series, that translation. I haven't heard anything about Thousand Autumns. I haven't heard anything about Remnants of Filth. But I do think that Seven Seas at least has found a schedule and or a team and or a editing cycle that has given them a more professional quality to their books. Also, as for like their actual physical books, they're lovely. I mean, they're nice paperbacks. I don't know what you want. Mm-hmm. I know some markets have them beautiful hardbacks and all sorts of things. These books would be a lot more expensive if we had that. And considering how many people in so many countries that are wanting these books that have currencies that are not nearly as strong as the US dollar, I think this is the perfect solution for that. They're nice, you know, French flap kind of larger trim novels. Not too heavy or overbearing, wieldy. So, you know, it's when you have a smaller market like Russian or Thai or Vietnamese, it's easier to make a more bespoke, beautiful set because you only have to really serve your immediate audience. There's certainly fans who will be buying it and not able to read it just because they want a edition from every version of that's ever been released. But 90% of your customers are going to be Vietnamese or Korean or Russian or whatever it is. So you don't have to think about the global market in the same way that an English release does. Because this book was released in the US and Canada, obviously, the UK, Australia, Singapore, South Africa, everywhere that speaks English, and plenty of places that don't speak English as a first language, but English is one of the universal languages there, they all have this book. It's a much grander scale. Anyway. So,
As a Moto Hagio stan, count your blessings.
Exactly. So the other thing and that I said, again, Seven Seas is by far the best of what I've read. Their translations, yes, they're inconsistent. Yes, they have had issues. I do think that a lot of those issues have, if not been fully addressed, they're proactively trying to be better. And I think that's all you can really ask at this stage is to, you know, make sure that we are getting releases that are within the confines of, again, an emerging market, something without the established translation structure, a translator structure, I should say, an editorial process. Is very much in its teething phases. Peach Flower House is, they have been around for as long as Seven Seas has done May, maybe a little bit before even. Their translations are not what I would call professional. I would be surprised if they have a very rigorous editorial process. As I joked about, it's not a joke, their first novel that they released, In the Dark, which is a contemporary crime fiction, Danmei, I have read the first half of that and I couldn't, that series, that book was so hard to parse. And that's set in current era. It's not using a whole bunch of, you know, genre phrasing and themes. It was just literally not clear as to what was happening a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. I do think that their subsequent books, again, Little Mushroom and Golden Terrace is by far their best translation. I wouldn't say that it is brilliant or to the standards that a larger publishing house would be, but it is markedly better than whatever In the Dark was. I also think that for all intents and purposes, and this isn't inherently like a good or a bad thing, but it does go to the utilitarian manner of writing, that being web novels, being self-published works, there are just going to be people who don't write, you know, to the level that someone who goes through the traditional publishing system do. And that's actually a misnomer, because there's plenty of people who are published through the traditional means that also can't write. But, like, I see it a lot in light novels. They're very wordy. They, you know, they go over the same simple concepts over and over. And you're like, yeah, okay, we get it. Like, we know what your magic system is. You don't have to explain it every time it's on screen. And that's literally because, sort of like Charles Dickens, who gets paid by the word, I feel like, again, with fan fiction writers, it's there to boost word count. It's there for people who are reading on a serial basis. They need that reminder every 3 chapters or whatever it is. And so you get a lot of repetition. You get a lot of over-explanation of stuff that is already very much established in canon. And so when you get self-published works, there absolutely are writers who are phenomenal, who are putting in, again, like fan fiction, there are people who are phenomenal. They are fantastic at crafting worlds, characters, a huge story, and every piece is a cultivated little tiny fragment of art. And then you have people who are just want to write the My Immortals of this world, just put out something fun and not worry about it. And if you get a publishing deal along the way, hey, that's even better. So I also think that, again, not speaking to any of these particular creators, aside from MXTX, because I do know that that is the case for her work, I can't speak to how good of writers they are. I would expect that Meat Bun and Priest are probably also fantastic. There is a reason why they are the well-known names of the genre. But I do think that, like with all self-published works, there is a level of amateurness that can be found, because the great thing about self-publishing is that anyone can do it. You can put your art into the world without anyone having to tell you what to do and enforce changes. And so, you know, sometimes that means you get some fantastic stuff that is a little bit over-explainy or a little too involved or forgets plot elements or whatever it is. And sometimes you just get crap. Like, you just absolutely get crap. And so, overall, and this is talking about Danmei in general, because I would say that of all of the Danmei in English, they've all been very prominent, popular series that people would want to see in English. But I feel like at some point we will start getting Danmei and Chinese fiction in general, in the same way that we get, like, light novel announcements where anything with, like, some kind of stupid premise is getting licensed, and you're asking, like, who is reading the isekai about the guy who reincarnated as an apple with magical powers? Like, who wanted that?
The answer is 12-year-olds in Japan, G.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is that if you've been in any kind of media fandom, or just as a fan of any kind of media that gets so much, that gains huge popularity, shonen manga, light novels, Korean webcomics, whatever it is, and any influx of popularity, the market will respond to that. Publishers, licensors will respond to that, which is how we have 4 million reincarnated as a baby in the Dungeon World series, anime and manga and light novels, every licensing season. And you as a reader, I mean, some of you out there are like, hell yeah, I love, I was reborn as a baby and now I need to reprove my life 2.7.
Now that's I need to get to series. Level 3000 in cooking with exactly. My elf harem.
Just harem, right? Oh, you didn't even mention the slaves.
Well, that goes without saying. So.
I feel, but so whenever anything gets popular, there's going to be a huge glut of it. There's going to be a huge amount that is just absolute crap. We haven't gotten to that point in English Danmei fandom publishing yet. But that is a very hefty yet. And considering how much Danmei as a genre has exploded, especially, again, over COVID, everyone was stuck in their houses. They didn't have anything to do except for watch TV and read and play music and have fun, do fun stuff. That interest in this sort of thing really grew. Maybe it might never get to the point where we are licensing, you know, every horrible idea that someone who's had 5 too many Red Bulls and listened to a pop song on the way home on the train has put out into the world. But right now, we are in the early stages of something that could be a lot bigger, and it has the growing pains of being in those early stages. I don't expect the publishing market to immediately be brilliant and perfect overnight for this sort of thing. I will say, and to get off of my soapbox, but I will say that Seven Seas, out of the three main publishers, is actually to somewhat of a professional quality level. And the reason that Peach Flower House and Violet Tea hasn't had the same backlash necessarily, comparatively to Seven Seas and their releases, is because those are much more boutique publishers that are directly servicing the existing Danmei fandom, compared to Seven Seas, which has a much broader distribution network, for one, but also just existing fan base and people who were not familiar with Danmei at all, who coming into it for the first time. So that's the difference, I think, as well. But I need to stop talking because my throat hurts.
Yep, those are just my impressions as a new reader going into this series and genre as a complete noob. Yeah, it's the first novel, at least. For a variety of reasons that G has just laid out, is below par. So, for, you know, and that's just what it comes down to.
Yep, yeah. But with that, I think we've answered everything. Is there anything, aside from all the translation hot takes and the plot that we've already gone over, is there anything you want to say, Ray, before we wrap it up, about your first experience as a Danmei reader and this series in particular and your approach to the genre going forward?
Good book. I'm going to keep reading the series.
Has it made you interested in any of the other numerous titles that we have?
It's just time is the problem. But I think I might try Modao Zushi at the very least. but I need to catch up on this one first, so.
With that, thank you everyone who sent in your questions, and I hope everyone enjoyed listening, both existing Danmei fans and new people just starting with the genre or just starting with Danmei or this particular series, you know, in general. Hopefully this was enjoyable. Again, apologies for all of our horrific translations or pronunciations of names. We do try our best. And hopefully everyone enjoyed this little bit of a different approach to the podcast this month. It's not going to be something that happens all the time, but it is nice to try something new every so often. And in saying that, next month we have something as well that's not completely new. We have done one of these before, but we are going to be doing a Mangamo Spotlight, wherein we talk about the Mangamo platform and the series on there. Both of us, I don't think either of us have spent a lot of time on Mangamo, but they do have a lot of exclusives on their platform. Mm-hmm. We would have done the Viz app, but I'm sorry, I don't live in a country where I can get that yet. And I don't want to VPN my app store, because you have, if you change it, you can't change it again until for 12 months. And I have too many things that I need to have access to on my phone. I'm just going to wait for the inevitable time when Australia is able to get the Viz app, because it will happen. It will happen. We'll do it at another time. Just
rest assured, whenever that Australian release date comes, we will be doing an emergency Viz app exploration episode for that month, replacing whatever topic we had decided to do. So worry not.
Hopefully it's not the month after next, like as soon as we finished. But we'll see. It'll happen at some point. So as always, be sure to leave your questions for us about Mangamo and maybe the series on there. You can send those questions in the comment section below if you're listening to us on YouTube. We also collect them every month on my Twitter account. That's @GReads. And you can follow me there for other various things. Again, Twitter hasn't completely died yet, so I am clinging on because it's either the whole thing collapses in on itself and nobody has Twitter anymore, or we finally just bully Elon off of the site. Whichever comes first, I welcome them both. You can also follow Ray on Twitter @WhimsicalPix, that's PIX. Or follow her YouTube channel, Whimsical Pictures. Is there anywhere else that you like to hang out, Ray?
That's about it. I, too, am clinging to Twitter for dear life. And I post a lot of theater girls. So, yep.
Brilliant. The most important content.
Everybody, consider... on June 25th, Takarazuka will be doing their first ever worldwide English subtitled live stream with a restream at a North American friendly time of their James Bond musical. It's an adaptation of Casino Royale, and it's like pretty reasonably priced at like $27. So, if you've ever had any vague passing interest in watching a Takarazuka musical, they are actively, like, doing something for us, for once. and if it does well, they are looking into doing it more in the future, so...
I would really recommend checking that out if it interests you at all. That is me off of my soapbox.
Brilliant. Love it. So, yes, be sure to follow our social medias. If you're a first-time listener and you are wanting to follow the podcast, Simply G is my YouTube channel. You can find all of our episodes on there. We are also on all of the major podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. Those are the only ones that matter. And, yeah, I'm sure we will catch you all in the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. Bye till then.
Bye, guys.